Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this first hour, we will be talking with Tori Eggerman and Kamran Ashtari. Kamran is a photographer and a graphic designer. Tori is a writer. They are a couple. And we'll be talking about some of their experiences living in Iran, some that they document in a book that they have put together that is titled Iran, View from Here. Kamran was born in Iran. When he was a teenager, he left and settled in the Netherlands and had been gone for a long time when his mother became ill and he went back for a visit. And he apparently was so interested in, fascinated by, curious about this place that in many ways seemed new to him that he decided he wanted to spend some more time there. And he brought Tori with him. They were going to go for a short visit and ended up spending more than 3 years. And one of the things that they did as they traveled around is they took a lot of photographs. And some of them are in the book. It's published by Ashtari Design and Deem Communications. They'll be doing a book signing at Pages for All Ages Bookstore tonight from 5 to 7. So if you're interested in looking at the book and meeting them, you can certainly stop by. Questions are also welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you can give us a call. They're here in Champaign Urbana spending some time because this is where Tori grew up and her family live here. Their more permanent home is in Amsterdam, and we're pleased that they could be here and spend a little bit of time with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Let me just begin. I'd like to get some of the basic story, get out some of the basic story first by asking Kamran, why was it that in your teens you left Iran and how did you happen to go to the Netherlands?
I left Iran when I was 17 because since I was 16 years old, I got involved with politics. This is right before revolution. After revolution, things get a little bit nasty. The first year was kind of wonderful place to be because you could say whatever you want to say. It was a lot of political activities, but not long after revolution, things start changing. What we call it now, a cultural revolution. There was no way for me to go to a school because they know that I was politically active. And you have to imagine that I was only 16 years old, so I could not be really big deal in politics. But it was not a good kind of future for me. So I left to Netherlands and I started studying there.
So you went to school there, you went to university, and in fact, you're a Dutch citizen.
Yes. Actually, I didn't have my high school diploma, so I had to get my high school diploma first in Holland, and then I went to the art school, and I graduated from art school in Amsterdam.
Hmm. So how is it now that you two ended up meeting?
Well, we met at art school, because I went in New York, and then Kamran was an exchange student there at my school at Cooper Union. Okay. And he was there for 2 years as an exchange student.
So then you met, at that time you got married?
No. No, we got married, I don't know, 5 years later?
Yes.
5 years later.
Okay. You should have command over these details. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
I know.
We're so bad with our anniversary. It's terrible.
Believe me, I'm bad too. My wife keeps track of all that kind of stuff. So then, what were the circumstances then of your going? You had left when you were in your teens. Then more than 20 years go by, your mom becomes ill. So that was your reason for then, after all that time, for going back, right?
Basically, it was because my mom got sick. I used to meet my mother or family in many different countries around Iran because I could not go to Iran. But my mother got really sick. She could not move. Last time I saw her, she said that next time you have to come to Iran because I'm not able to leave or walk anymore. And that stuck in my head for a long time. We finally made the decision to go to Iran to visit her. It was first time in 22 years. Everything was really shocking for me. I was from one side really excited, And from the other side, I was really scared because it's true that it was during the Khatami period, but everything still was really scary. You didn't have a lot of option. You did not have any protection. So I'm really glad that I went to see my my mother. And basically, it's really, it was a good thing to do.
Yeah. Maybe we should establish now, what year was this that we were talking about?
This is 2003.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. But before the present government came to power, certainly before Mr. Ahmadinejad became the president. Was it difficult for you to get permission, or did you have to go through some complicated procedure to get permission from the government of Iran actually to come?
When I decided to go and get the permission to get the Iranian passport, everything went very smooth. But it took me like 10 years to decide to go back to Iran, because at the time they had this policy that you had to sign a paper saying that you feel bad you left your country, and I didn't want to do it. I wasn't only one. A lot of people still doesn't do it. They don't do it. They don't want to go. They don't want to sign it. But the day that they get rid of this policy, I went to the Iranian embassy in Den Haag and signed papers to get my passport.
Mm-hmm. Was it then different, Tori, when you come to the point where now that you decided that you were going to go too? Because I think if I have all this right, the first time that Kamran went, he just went by himself.
Right.
So you didn't go.
No.
But then you made the decision that then you were going to go too. What sort of things did you have to go through as an American to then get permission to go? Was that complicated?
It wasn't that complicated because I'm a woman and I'm married to an Iranian man. So if I were a man married to an Iranian woman, I mean a foreign man married to an Iranian woman, it would have been very complicated. But because I'm a woman, it was very easy. They gave me an Iranian passport to travel with. Mm-hmm. And it's almost required, isn't it, Kamran?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there's no other way. We had to have a wedding with a mullah.
So you had to get married a second time. Yes. So that it would be official as far as the Iranians were concerned.
Yeah, we had to pay 50 euros for him to marry us, right?
And it took like 5 minutes.
So now you're really official, though.
Then he offered to convert me for 50 more euros, but I said, thank you, no.
Kamran, you were talking about the fact that perhaps when you went back now, after having been gone for such a long time, you were surprised by what you saw, interested by what you saw. Did it feel to you that there were some ways in which Iran now in 2003 was a different place from the Iran that you left when you were 16, 17 years old?
First time, actually, I didn't see a lot because I got to Tehran International Airport and left Tehran in the same night because my mother was sick. First time I went for 2 weeks, I only visited my mother in the city of Iraq. Mm-hmm. I didn't basically see anything on behalf of 250 family members. But I could see that things are much different, at least in my my city. My city was kind of ugly-looking industrial city with not a lot of flavor to it. But after this time, when I got out of the house first couple of days, I could see there are a lot of small changes. But my bakery didn't paint his bakery shop for last 22 years. The street was almost the same. They say because Iran spent a lot of money during the war with Iraq, so they didn't have enough. They always have excuses for not building things. But it was just great experience to go and see all my family in the same place. They planned it for a long time. They know that I want to come to Iran. But I made my decision in 3 days. I got my passport and I got my ticket so that they were all shocked. They were not prepared enough for me to get there. It was shocking for me.
Yeah. So you were not only were you seeing family that you hadn't seen for a long time, I'm sure you saw people that you had never seen, people who had been born since the time that you had left.
Almost half of my family I did not see because they were all born after I left. So to get to know them, it was from one side really exciting. Iranians are very connected to their family. They basically, family is everything for them. But from the other side, it was really painful because they were talking about things that I did not have anything to do with it. I did not have any memory for them.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Tori, you for anyone meeting your partner's family, this is this is stressful, challenging, difficult. It's of course it's a wonderful thing, but it's also sort of a scary thing because you're trying to get to know them and you want them to like you and to think that you're okay. What sort of experience was this like for you now meeting all of your husband's family for the first time?
I have to say it was overwhelming. But I think that I knew it would be overwhelming, so I was at least somewhat prepared. But we spent 1 year in Iran just seeing his family. And you cannot imagine what it's like when you go visit an Iranian family in Iran. Because, first of all, they all have closets full of mattresses, little futon mattresses. And they can sleep, you know, in a tiny little apartment or a big apartment, whatever, you can sleep 20, 30 people, no problem. Everybody gets a mattress. Everybody gets a blanket. And a lot of people snore. And we were around people all the time. And I had to really learn how to handle being around people all the time, not just his family. His family is great. They were a lot of fun. And they were really, really welcoming to me. Hmm. But it is very difficult for a Westerner and one who's grown up with, you know, a certain amount of privacy. I mean, I grew up in a fairly large family, but they seem small in comparison to Kamran's family.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to be around people so much. They talk all night. They talk all day. They talk all night. Somebody is always awake.
The funny thing is that for the first couple of weeks, we did not have even 1 minute for ourselves. And that was the hardest part because when you grew up in the U.S. or in Europe, you are in charge of your time. You can decide when you want to spend your time with your family and when you want to spend time with friends or when you want to read. But when you are in an Iranian family, and especially if they haven't seen you for 22 years and you bring in your American wife, they feel like they have to do everything for you. They have to be 24 hours with you. They did not know that this kind of torture for us because we kind of want to have some time for ourselves. So first couple months, for me, actually first year, until I get used to the idea that, hey, I can tell them, back up, I want some time for myself. It was really hard. Yeah. And I'm sure that it was 10 times harder for Tori. Yeah.
Let me just introduce again real quickly our guests, Kamran Ashtari and Tori Eggerman. Kamran was born in Iran, and as we have explained, when he was a teenager, he left. He went and settled in the Netherlands. He is a Dutch citizen. He went to school there and studied, and he's a graphic designer and photographer. He's had his work published and exhibited all over the world. Tori is an American. She is a writer. She's authored a number of articles on many subjects, from the Weimar Republic to the Islamic Republic in Iran. And right now she's working on a book about living in Iran. They met when she – both of them actually were in school at Cooper Union in New York and then had spent now several years in Iran. As we've told the story, Kamran went back for a short visit when his mom was ill. Then they went back for an extended period of time. And one of the things that they did when they were there is they took a lot of photographs, and you can see some of them in the book that they have done, Iran View From Here. They'll be doing a book signing at Pages for All Ages tonight from 5 to 7. They're here visiting for a while in Champaign-Urbana, where Tori grew up. And questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455. toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm sure, Tori, that the, one of the things that people always ask, people here in the United States, I'm sure, ask you all the time is they'd say, well, what was it like being an American in Iran? How were you received? How did people react to you being from the United States, given the fact that there is some tension in the relationship between the governments of the two countries?
You cannot imagine what a great country Iran is to travel in for an American. I mean, it is fairly unimaginable. When you, everywhere you go, people are so excited to meet an American. I would always tell people I was American. And no matter who I met, whether they were, you know, Revolutionary Guard or taxi drivers or mullahs or judges or whoever I met, I told them I was American. And I never, well, maybe once, faced any hostility. And people were unbelievable. It was so welcoming. And I'm sure that everybody here knows that during Friday prayer, for instance, in Iran, they chant down with America. And everyone I met would say, oh, no, I never say down with America. I say long live America, or they say something else when they raise their fist. But, you know, it was amazing. People were just so nice, so excited to meet me.
Did that surprise you? Were you a little unsure about what kind of reception you'd get or what people would think about you before you went and actually started meeting people?
Yes, it did surprise me.
It surprised me a lot. I was so worried to take Tori with me because I wasn't in Iran for a long time. In the beginning of revolution, when they were saying down with America, they really mean it. So I was kind of scared. We always have a couple of different plans. Plan A, if they do this. Plan B, if they do this. So it was kind of refreshing to see that they have been changed, they have changed, and they like foreigners. Funny thing is that our British friends, if they want to travel through Iran, they would call us and see if we want to go with them. Because being with Tori would make everything much, much easier. She's very social, she can talk to people, she's very nice to Iranians. So it was really a great experience, but I was surprised.
So no one in your family said to you something like, why couldn't you have found a nice Iranian girl to marry?
I think that if they were saying that, I would not talk to them for a long time.
Okay.
No, they were very nice from the beginning. They know that I know what I want. So they were very nice to say anything.
What another thing that I'm sure that people wonder about is just what it's the experience of being a woman.
Right.
And in what sort of constraints there are on you, or did you feel that there were constraints on you? What you could do, where you could go, what you could wear, how you would behave, simply because of the fact that you're a woman.
Yes, there are constraints on you if you're a woman. If you're a Western woman, though, you are really in a position of privilege in Iran because the men. They treat you as an honorary man, so you're allowed to see them, you know, you're allowed to speak to them. And the women, you have total access to women's culture, so no one has more access in Iran than a Western woman. And Iranian women are totally amazing. I would say you should not feel sorry for them. They are really tough, really amazing women. I have so much respect for them. That said, there are a lot of legal constraints on women in Iran. First, you have to wear hijab, which is the Islamic dress. In Iran, that means you just have to wear a scarf, and you have to wear long sleeves and something that will cover your butt, probably get mid-thigh, although now they're trying to lengthen it again. So you have to wear hijab, but you there are the legal constraints are part of Sharia law that women are not. What are they about? They get one half of their inheritance. It's very difficult for them to get custody of their children in a divorce. Divorce is a very difficult thing. Those kinds of constraints exist.
It's looking through the photographs, and when you look at pictures of women and girls, it seems like the one thing is that certainly all of the women are wearing some kind of head covering. Looks like even babies, even little girls, there are pictures of little babies that presumably it's the girls, they have their head covered too. But there's only one picture here that I could really think of. It looks like it's a picture in a market where there are women who are completely covered, and some of them wearing this very odd looking mysterious mask like thing that I've never seen anything quite like it. Is there a range in what it is, what women are wearing, and how much they are covered, and in fact, whether women are here, these women who are wearing this thing, their face is completely covered. There's just a little place where they can look out. There must be some kind of latitude about these are the rules, but within that, you can finesse them some.
Yes, I mean, most of the rules about hijab in Iran are cultural, so. When you look at the picture of the women in the masks, they live near the Persian Gulf, where it's really, really sunny and hot. And if the wind comes up, the dust can really get in your eyes. So you can see culturally, they have started to cover their faces, and the masks are for the married women. They're supposed to add to their beauty. When you see that much covering on a woman, you also see the men are very covered as well. They also have something that they, you know, a headdress on and will cover their face because it's so dusty. Those are a small minority. I mean, many Iranians may not have seen the women in the masks. Mm-hmm. And the range, Tehran is the best place to go to see the range of dress. You can see women in chadors, which is like a chador is means tent in Persian, and it's just one big black cloak, which is what you see the women wear when they go to mosque. And some of them wear it, you know, so only one eye is showing, which is not common, right? But that happens. And then you'll see women who wear incredibly tight, they're called mantos, which is the jacket you wear to cover yourself, really, really tight with the scarf maybe resting on the back of a ponytail and most of their hair showing and lots of hair coming out the back. It's kind of like a Band-Aid or something. So you see an incredible range of dress in Iran among women.
Hmm. I want to talk some more about the book. This is always – it's challenging if you do a show like this where you're trying to talk about something that's visual. You can kind of describe it. And as I said a couple times here – Tori and Cameron are going to be doing a book signing at Pages for All Ages bookstore tonight from 5 to 7. So you can actually go there. You can meet them. You can take a look at the book. You can see the photographs. We don't have to do it only this way. But since here we're on the show, we have to do it this way. One of the things I think it's kind of interesting is that you present the photographs in groups. There are some essays where you write about your experiences. But there you have to go all the way to the end to get some photo captions. So you can find out what these pictures are about, but your first experience, if you're just going through the book from the start to finish, you're going to come across these photos and you maybe don't know exactly what it is you're looking at. I'm assuming this is a deliberate choice in the way that you put the book together for people first just to come to the photographs and just sort of take them for what they are, maybe not really knowing who the people are, where the photograph is taken, what's going on. Why did you put it together that way?
First of all, I think everything that you do about Iran is very difficult. If it's an interview or you do a film or you do a book, you're dealing with very difficult subject. We didn't want to do a book about Iran. We just want to show our experience. We want to show where we went, what kind of people we met. If Iranians look at this book, they would probably say that we show only very small part of Iran. We didn't show the modern Iran. We didn't show the glory of Iran. We had a hard time to come up with a selection of photos that fit our version of Iran first. We took almost 10,000 photographs. And we want people to go through the book without any expectation. And we like to give them also the opportunity to know more about the photos in the back of the book. The way that we designed it, we didn't want a lot of words. We want just images to say what they want to say, if they're saying anything. And that's why we put all the photographs in a small caption for photographs in the back of the book.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is striking to me, part of it is the variety of landscape and environments that are here. And I would expect that probably if you don't know a lot about Iran, you would think, well, Iran, this is the Middle East, and it's hot and it's arid. And one of the things that people, I'm sure, will be surprised at is there are pictures here of snow. Right. There's here a wonderful picture of people riding on a ski lift, and here there's a sensational sort of shot covering two pages of, so I presume this is sunset. I guess this is two different. It looks like it's one picture, but I guess it's two different pictures with a snowman here in the foreground. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how different places in Iran, how different they are when you travel from one place to the next, and the experience of the landscape and the environment is really different depending upon where it is that you are.
First, I have to say that if you ask an Iranian, what do you like about your country, they all say, this just all say, we have four seasons. What other country in the world has four seasons? And it became such a joke. I mean, after a while, I couldn't understand it. You know, but everyone tells you this: four seasons, four seasons, four seasons. They mean, I think, that they have four seasons at one time.
Oh, but, I see. Depending if you can have any season you want, depending
right.
on where it is that you
yes.
are.
Oh, okay. But they are very proud of their seasons, and they're very proud of their country, I mean, of the land. It is a very beautiful country and incredibly diverse. You go 2 hours, let's say 2 hours south of Tehran, and you're in sand dunes. You go 2 hours north of Tehran, and you're in a forest. It really is. There are so many unexpected landscapes, and it is so incredibly beautiful. And that is something that really overwhelms a lot of travelers to Iran. I would say that after going to Iran, I would say I understand why so many Iranians have settled in California, where a lot of the landscape is very similar.
Mm-hmm. And so there are pictures of landscape here of the kind of thing that I guess you would expect
right.
if you hadn't gone, you would expect, okay, that's what Iran's going to look like. But there's mountains, there's grassland, there's snow, there are all kinds of different, you know, here's a picture that clearly is desert. It's parched, it's cracked. You think, okay, I know what that is. That's what I'm expecting. But then you see the pictures of taken in the snow, and you think, well, that's really not what I really would expect from Iran.
Yeah, and in Tehran, you can ski in Tehran, basically. They had the earliest ski season in their history this year. They opened in October, I think. And they're known for having the best cheap skiing in the world. So anybody want to take a ski vacation, a lot of Europeans do. They go to Iran for their ski vacations.
Ski Iran. I wouldn't really think exactly. about that, but, you know, I guess you can look into that.
We have friends who skied every single day during the season.
Mm-hmm. Our guests here, we're a little bit past the midpoint here. Our guests are Tori Eggerman and Kamran Ashtari, and they have put together this book about some of the photographs they took and when they were living for an extended time in Iran. The book is Iran View from Here. It's published by Ashtari Design and Deem Communications. They'll be doing a book signing tonight at Pages for All Ages between 5 and 7. The basic story, as we've explained, is that Kamran grew up in Iran, left when he was a teenager, settled in the Netherlands, went back because his mom was sick. So interested in reinvestigating and getting to know again the place where he had grown up that he ended up going back and then going back for an extended time, taking Tori. They planned to spend a couple of months and ended up being there for more than 3 years, did travel a lot and took a lot of photographs. I think, Cameron, you said over 1,000? You took over 1,000 pictures?
I think we have more than 10,000.
More than 10,000 pictures. So a few of them selected for the book. And questions, comments, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have somebody who wants to join in the conversation here, and we'll do that. Champaign County is the caller here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I was wondering if you're sharing any of these photos on the Internet. I know you would like to push the book and all, but if there were some samples in lower resolution or something like that so we could look at it while we were talking, because it's a little difficult to have this conversation. I'm sure that the participants realize
that
we can't see what you're looking at. But I actually keyed in on something you said at the very beginning, and I hope I can digress back to that. In your youth, you said you found the initial days of the revolution very exciting. You said the first year. And there's a lot of contentious things been said, including by the prime minister at the time, Bani Sadr, who was not even a leftist. He was sort of a moderate and he was quite a secular gentleman. He's, I guess, retired in France, or in exile in France, I guess is better put. He alleges this argument about October surprise that Robert Perry has documented somewhat, and even Gary Sick, who was in the Bush administration, has written about. I'm just wondering whether you can reflect in some way your perspective on that time, because Bani Sadr goes as far as saying that the deal that was cut actually sort of helped reinforce and help the clerical ascendancy, basically, and help the mullahs get more power, and throw out the secularists. And I'm not sure exactly what you were saying about the timeline of when you actually left it. So I know it's a digression from your book, but if you just have a few words on that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Okay.
To see more photos of the book, if you go on www.ashtaridesign.com, it can give you a link, and there is a flash of our photos. I don't want to get into what Bani Sadr say or what is October surprise, because I don't have enough information, but I can only say from my experience that early 79, right before revolution and a year after, it was a kind of year that I can always still dream of it. It was a period that Iranians were very hopeful. They want to see changes. They went through really hard time during the Shah period. They were hoping that they would have a country that that they have freedom, that they can express themselves. But things after revolution change. Why is change? I am not the person to be able to answer those. But for me, it was more like you waking up one day and you're sweated, you're kind of scared because things are changing. It's exactly, that period was exactly like now. They start putting people in jail, they start telling them you cannot say this or you cannot do that. So it was kind of a strange time. And that's why I left, because I feel like I could not go after my dreams that they told us we're going to have a freedom, we're going to be a country that has good relationship with other countries, that we're going to concentrate on better economy. But none of this happened, so I left Iran.
The war against Iraq was sponsored at that time very quickly, too, so that obviously must have had an effect. How easy it was for you to get out? I remember speaking with an Iranian guy who actually walked across, I don't know, I'm forgetting which border it was, but he walked a great distance to leave. I think he was about your age at the time.
I've walked for a long time to get out of Iran. I would never forget it. It was nightmare. I wasn't only one. Thousands of people did that. A lot of people die on the way. And that's why I never forgive Iranian government for that. Because no government should have right to do things to teenager that Iranian government did.
Was there the threat of the military?
That was part of it. But before I had to go to military, I could not study because I get involved with politics right before revolution. You have to imagine I grew up in very small city. Everybody knows each other. And if you are not fit in this main political group, then you are always in trouble. After a year, I had to leave my hometown, Iraq, go to south of Iran, and then after that, I move again back to Tehran. And there I decide to leave a country. I look for friends who want to do it with me, and we left.
I see. Well, thank you very much. And at some point, could you spell the name of your design company? Because I'm not quite sure I got that.
We'll do that for
you.
Thank you. Yeah, all right. My apologies. I guess I should have mentioned your website so that then, yes, people can go on the website and they can see some of the photos. And it is ASHTARY, Ashtari Design. So www.ashtaridesign, all is one word, .com. And if you go there, you can see some of the pictures. And again, as I said, if you'd like to hear more from the guests, you'd like to take a look at the book itself, they'll be doing a book signing tonight at Pages for All Ages between 5 and 7. Our guests, Cameron Ashtari and Tori Eggerman. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So when you left, you left Iran on foot, huh?
Yes.
What country did you, from Iran, what country did you go into?
I went to Pakistan first. I flew to Zahedan, in a city of border city with Pakistan. We stayed there for a couple of nights to make sure that everything is okay. We were planning to leave Iran on horse, but I don't know what happens, but they say there was no horse, so we have to walk. It was really hard. Especially, I had a really bad back pain because I was thrown out of window a couple months earlier. So it was really hard. But I'm glad I did it. That was the best walk I had.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. Let's go to, we have a couple of champagne callers. Next is line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
First, a brief background comment and then a question. Your guests may be interested to know that the University of Illinois years ago had a very large exchange program with the University of Tehran. And there are many people in this community who were affiliated with that program and who have been to Iran, and who would gladly, as I do, underline your comment that Iran is a very beautiful and a very hospitable country. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
Nice.
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Thank
you.
Yeah. Yes. We heard you. Go ahead.
Silence confused me. Could you comment on whether or not an American could safely visit Iran as a tourist these days if that person were not a member of an Iranian family?
I think absolutely. And I should also say that if that person was not politically active in anything against the regime, then I don't think there would be a problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would I know the State Department may disagree with me, but I would 100% recommend it.
Right.
I think it's one of the most pleasant countries in the world for an American to travel through.
Well, I'm aware of that. I just
right.
wondered whether or not, and my sons were in Iran a few years ago with their Iranian mother, but I just wondered, because of the present climate, let's leave it as bland as that, whether or not it's still possible for an American to move freely throughout the country as a tourist.
Well, you don't really move freely, and that's the problem. Americans must have tour guides.
Oh.
You have to go with a tour.
Okay.
So that is really problematic. But you could have a tour guide and just go with a couple people, and it probably would be more pleasant for you because that person could act as a translator. And for me, I felt like the most exciting thing about traveling through Iran was talking to people. And since I speak Persian, that really that helps. But I would really recommend going with somebody who could translate. But as far as your safety is concerned, and I think it is still a very safe country for Americans to travel in.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to another champagne person here. This is line three. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My question is regards to how the Iranian people think of their government, especially since the guests had so much opportunity to converse and meet different Iranian people. I want to know what their general stance is on the government that governs them, basically.
Okay. Go ahead.
I should repeat what an Iranian pollster said, which is that Iranians tell you exactly what you want to hear no matter what. So it's very hard to gauge opinion. But one thing that you get a sense of is that Iranians in general seem to feel that their government does not represent them. And they do not feel a personal connection to the government. Wouldn't you say that's true? And they express overall, I would say, a lot of anger toward the government. And one thing that surprises all visitors to Iran, especially journalists who have never been there before, is the kind of willingness of people to just bash the government. As long as they're not organized, Iranians can pretty much say what they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere you go, people are complaining.
And what are they complaining mostly about? Like, is it just the fact that they're being, governed? I don't know, but, the religious factor of the government, or is it more just the corruption within the government? Could you comment a bit more on that?
I would say it's the corruption. That is the biggest complaint. What do you think, Kamran?
I think so, too. I think that Iranian government shouldn't be worried about U.S. attacking Iran because there is so much corruption in the country that is even 10 times more dangerous than any military attack or any other attack.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I would expect that, again, this would be one of those things, particularly, Tori, that people would, when they found out that you had spent a lot of time there and would always ask about whether you talked about politics with people, whether people were willing to talk about politics. Did they right away start talking about politics, or did you have to, broach the subject?
I never broached the subject. I never had to, or even wanted to, because I didn't want people to think I was a spy or anything like that. But people always talk about politics in Iran. It is the price of chicken, the price of tomatoes, the price of gasoline, of course, and the price of housing. These are the big topics in Iran.
Yeah. Well, you would expect that would be – well, those are sort of the big topics anywhere probably.
Right.
The cost of living, what your house is like, those sorts of – meeting the daily requirements of daily life, I suppose. That is going to be the thing that's going to consume people no matter where you are. But they do to voice their – openly voice concerns about the government and government policy and,
yes.
and that sort of thing. Yeah.
And you would be surprised how well-educated people are about their the policies of their government, about the policies of our government, and in general, how, you know, we worry because we hear everything that, say, Ahmadinejad has to say, or we hear what they say, but you don't hear how Iranians respond, which is they don't believe even the truth when they hear it, if it comes from their government.
Do you have a sense of why it is that he was elected president? What
yeah.
contributed to his electoral success?
Oh yeah, I think it's because he presented himself as honest, and you cannot imagine how fed up Iranians were with corruption before that election. And he, if you looked at I was looking at the campaign ads. So you have Rafsanjani, who was campaigning against Ahmadinejad, and Rafsanjani is sitting, you know, in his ad, he's sitting in a giant gold chair. He looks like a king. And then you would go to Ahmadinejad's ad, and you would see his house, which was just a very simple house that most Iranians live in, you know, very simple, with carpets on the floor, pillows along the walls, one television, a little one, and a little telephone in the corner. And you would say, okay, this is the house of an honest man. I mean, it was what I thought looking at it. So imagine what Iranians were thinking when they saw that.
But I should say that a lot of people were surprised to see Ahmadinejad get elected, because it's true that he was the mayor of Tehran, and a lot of people think that he did a good job. But to be president of Iran, you expect somebody with a lot more experience, at least in foreign policy, or at least somebody who can keep his mouth sometime, you know. So for us, it was very surprising. For most of diplomats in Iran, was a lot of shocking news to her. I know a lot of Iranian foreign journalists who wrote 3-4 different articles in case of this president get elected or that president get elected. But it was, for almost everybody, huge shock to see that Ahmadinejad get elected with not so a lot of voters voting for him.
Well, we're getting short on time here, and I have one caller here. I want to see if we can make sure we get him in. Someone who is listening up in Iroquois County on line one. Let's go there. Hello.
Yes, I'll just make a couple comments there and just hang up and for the results, I guess. I'm just puzzled why anybody would want to travel in a country that harbors terrorists and has insisted on building the nuclear bomb that would destroy this country and Israel and whoever else gets in the way. And it's pretty obvious to me that this gentleman must not talk too much of this country, because he doesn't live there, and he got the hell out to get educated somewhere else, because obviously it's not a very good place to be. Thank you. I'll hang up.
Well, okay. Why would anybody want to? Because, you know, the picture we get of Iran is that it's a threat. That's what our government tells us. And if you read mainstream press and the preoccupation with the press, particularly of Iran and its nuclear, its what is said to be its nuclear ambitions, you might say, well, gosh, why would I want to go to a place like that?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I would say that I would recommend going. It's very important. I think that we could do more with an army of tourists than we could ever do with a military involvement. And everyone knows that I'm against nuclear weapons, especially in Iran. But I have to tell you, if I were an Iranian and I saw, you know, for instance, the gassing in the Kurdish villages in Iran, when Iran took that to the UN and nobody did anything about it, nobody cared, you have to ask, at that point, you have to say, who's going to protect me? You know, they don't live in a safe neighborhood. And I don't want to defend them. I don't think they should get the bomb. But, you know, it is very important for us to understand what the motivations are, that they have been attacked, that they tried to take it to the UN, and that no one paid attention to them.
I'm sure for Cameron that your connection, your primary connection here is to your family, this big family that you have that's still there, and that to the place that you still feel connected, even though you know you didn't support the previous regime and you might like things to be different politically, that you still feel a personal connection, maybe through your family, but a personal connection to the place where you were born.
I think that is very logical experience. I mean, I love Iran. I know that we are in a very difficult situation. I know that the Iranian government want things on their plate that they should not have. But I don't think that the politic is so black and white to think that if you like Iran, that means that you agree with a certain part of their policy. I think I can say that about the U.S. too. I love a lot of things in U.S., and I hate a lot of things, especially in the foreign policy of U.S. government.
We're going to have to stop because we're at the end of the time.
Thank you.
If you would like to see some of the photographs that our guests have taken and are in their book, Iran View From Here, you can go to their website, www.ashtaridesign.com, or you can go to Pages for All Ages Bookstore tonight. Sometime between 5 and 7, they'll be doing a book signing. You can meet them and you can see the book Iran View From Here that they put together based on their experiences in Iran. Kamran Ashtari is a photographer and graphic designer. Tori Eggman is a writer, and she grew up here in Champaign-Urbana, so they're here for a little while visiting her family, but then they're going to go back home to the Netherlands, and then from there, I don't know where. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
For being here. We appreciate it.